Now joining us, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, New York Times investigative reporter David Farenthold. Good morning, David.
Morning.
We have so much to talk about. First of all, it's nice to meet you, and I'm glad we just get to jump in with a impactful conversation, I hope. I want to start with this announcement by President Biden to try once again to reduce student loan debt. It's a promise to forgive it for millions of Americans. Now, this is something that he's tried to do before. It was struck down. So what is different this time from what you can tell related to the details he's proposing?
Well, he is trying. You're right. This is something he's done a number of times, and it keeps losing in court. And I think he's trying again. This is slightly different legally. There's a hope there that there will be some. It'll work better in court. But, you know, I think at this point we have to understand this basically as a political gesture. You know, he hopes this will happen, and he hopes it will, you know, loan forgiveness will come out to somebody, but he's will happen for some people. But he's really trying to demonstrate to voters, look, this is what I really want to do, even though the Republicans keep blocking me.
Yeah. Now, I know this rarely happens, but sometimes politicians will propose things they know may not have a chance to pass, but it scores them political points. Do you think this is something that could feasibly happen before the election?
I don't really think people will see any real world impact before the election. Certainly, this is something that Republicans are going to try to block, as they've tried to block it before. And, you know, to give them their due, this is not just a political gesture from them. They also believe it's basically unfair to people who didn't take out student loans or who paid off their student loans that the government would subsidize others who have not yet. But yes, I think they will block it. And I don't see anything, you know, because of court challenges, I don't see any real impact before the election.
Yeah. And how big of a deal is this for the voting bloc, for President Biden to keep, you know, making an effort to do this? You have to think this is a big issue for them.
It is. And if you look at polls, I mean, obviously young people, and, you know, we're counting people up to 30 or 35 as young in this case, have been an important voting bloc for Democrats and for President Biden in the past. Polling, to the degree that's reliable so far, shows some drift of those folks away from him, either to Donald Trump or to not voting, or to voting for a third party candidate like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And among them, a broad sense that Biden is too old or doesn't care about their priorities. So this is an attempt to show those folks, look, I care about you. I'm trying to fix the thing that bothers you. One of the things that bothers you the most, even if I keep getting thwarted as I try to fix it.
Yeah. You know, in one poll that was released last month, I think 70% of young people said the issue of student loan forgiveness was important or very important. 70% of them. And, you know, these, I would think all candidates, but specifically the Democrats, need those younger voters to turn out. You know, this new approach, so this new proposal, just for everyone, if you're just now hearing about this proposal, it targets five groups of borrowers: those whose loans have ballooned because of interest, those who've been paying for decades, five different areas. Won't go into all the details, but it's not for everyone who has student loan debt, but certain categories. How much would this end up costing? Has that been estimated?
I have not seen that. Actually, I know it would be expensive, but I have not seen the estimate.
Right. Well, thank you so much for shedding light on that particular topic. Let's move to President Trump. And he had a big announcement yesterday related to abortion. The big announcement that he's really not going to take it head on and make it a state's issue. And there's been a lot of strong reaction to this from his own party.
Yeah. Mike Pence, his former vice president, said, you know, this is a horrible thing, unforgivable. A lot of folks for whom abortion is the most important issue and who were hoping that Trump would endorse some kind of national abortion ban, are unhappy. That said, those are exactly the kind of people who are the most fervent for Trump. They don't really have another candidate to turn to in this election. So I can't see him losing any votes or a substantial amount of votes from the right because of his abortion stance. I think there's two things going on here. One, Trump understands the degree to which abortion was critical in losing Republican seats in 2022, and he doesn't want to repeat that. And two, abortion doesn't matter to Trump. And this has not ever been an issue that really motivated him. He knows it motivates other people, but he's not, you know, an ideological warrior on this issue, and he's choosing the most politically expedient path.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk for a minute about that Southwest Airlines flight landed at Denver International. It took off from Denver, maybe came back. Did I get that right? Keep me honest. Okay, so what do we know about what happened here? This was a Boeing jet, correct?
Yes, I have to confess I have not followed that, unfortunately.
Okay, All good. I know something you have followed up because I didn't know if we'd have time to get to it, but let's do it. There was, in addition to President Trump and the abortion issue yesterday, there was also some movement in the legal space. Can you just give us an update on the hush money trial and what was the significance of what happened yesterday?
So this is one of Trump's four trials, probably the only one that we think seems likely to come to trial before the election. And it's the sort of in some ways the smallest stakes. It's about hush money payments that Trump had his attorney, Michael Cohen, make to Stormy Daniels, the former, you know, the porn star, before the 2016 election, basically to keep her story about her affair with Trump out of the headlines before the election. So Trump is being accused of violating campaign finance laws with those payments in New York State. So it's a case brought by the Manhattan District Attorney against Trump. And it's coming to trial next week, right, the 15th. So what Trump has said, what Trump is doing is suing the judge, basically alleging the judge is biased against him, which is an argument he's made on social media, and that he shouldn't, this judge should not be allowed to preside over him. Now, this is a long-standing tactic, obviously, to Trump. When he can't win the case, he doesn't try to try the case. He tries to try the system, you know, to look for ways to sort of throw monkey wrenches in the whole system. And in this case, using political bias. I don't think it's going to work. If it did, we would all, everybody who is accused of a crime would just sue the judge to get out of their criminal trial. So I don't think it's going to work. I think he will go to trial next week. I don't know what the political import of that will be, but it certainly seems like that trial is going to happen.
Yeah, I guess the strategy has been you got to give it a shot. You just never know.
Right. And some of these Hail Marys have worked for him. This one seems like an even less likely Hail Mary than most.
Yeah. Well, David, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for bringing your expertise. Thank you for your hard work. And we will talk to you next time.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Colleen. It's time for Choke Points. West Seattle, you are on notice. The Low Bridge is about to close for 9 days for much-needed upgrades. Chris, do tell.
Yeah, well, the Lower Spokane Street Swing Bridge is going to close at midnight Friday, April 19th, and it will remain closed until midnight Sunday, April 28th. That's two weekends and a full work week where the Low Bridge will be out of commission. This isn't the first time the bridge has been shut down for the ongoing upgrades on the bridge over the Duwamish River.
We actually have a lot of exciting new elements happening over at the Lower Spokane Swing Bridge. They try to make it more resilient, but also just to replace a lot of the old aging infrastructure, the mechanical electrical elements associated with the bridge.
Kit Liu is the Regional Director for Roadway Structures at the Seattle Department of Transportation. Workers have already replaced some cylinders that help the bridge turn. Now it's time to work on all the wiring for the control and communication systems.
It's basically the computer system, all the knobs and all the push buttons, everything that the bridge operator needs to utilize in order to open and close the bridge. So we're basically replacing the entire system.
The old control tower wires were actually strung on the high bridge, if you can believe it. Lou says they've been moved to a conduit under the Duwamish River.
We fished the new line through already, and we're in the process of splicing it in and do some tests. And that basically would lead into the actual control system replacement.
It's that system replacement that will be completed during that upcoming 9-day closure. Now, to make sure that SDOT can pull this off during the closure, Lou says they actually built a mock control system off-site and tested it so they know what to expect.
We had a bridge operator go down there and actually test the system to see if they could break it, but also to see if there's other issues that might come up in terms of resets and stuff like that.
This is expected to cause delays for people heading into and out of West Seattle. There's also the freight impact for the trucks heading to Terminal 5 onto Harbor Island. Lou says people should expect to add a lot of extra time to their trips, and truckers need to pay attention to their bosses to find out exactly what the detour route's going to look like.
There's going to be some congestion on the high bridge during the normal weekday during that closure. But we have a detour route and work with Port of Seattle to get the detour routes in place to make sure that they do have a flow of traffic going through and not bottleneck some of the key areas that get onto Terminal 5.
Now, the biggest impact of this closure, other than that truck traffic, will be the bicyclists and pedestrians who use that lower bridge primarily because they can't use the high bridge, obviously. Metro's offering those communities free daily round-trip passes to get around during this closure. You can find the app and the rewards code for that at MyNorthwest.com.
Thank you. So do I have time for a couple of questions?
By all means, of course.
Okay, so even though I go to West Seattle all the time, I'm having trouble visualizing this exact spot. Can you set the stage?
Well, it's down below. So it's if you go and say where you get off at Del Ridge or to get off at that or you know, in that area to your right, we got the the lower Spokane Street Spring Bridge, which is over the Duwamish River. It's the one that you would take to maybe go get a ride along the waterfront along West Seattle on the Harbor Island side. You'd use that way to get down. You wouldn't be on the High Bridge for that, though you can access them both from there. But it really provides access down into DeSoto and for people on First Avenue, you know, to get there without having to go around and get up on
that's
the High Bridge.
So what's the workaround here?
Well, basically use the High Bridge. That's really the only other option, because this bridge is not going to be functional for 9 days. So, yeah, the High Bridge is where you're going to have to. So if you're on First Ave, you're going to have to go around and pop up or, you know, go the long way around and maybe go up 509 and pop up the backside of West Seattle.
Fun times.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, again, West Seattle's been through this before. I mean,
for many, many months,
years, when you consider when the High Bridge was out for repairs. So, yeah, this is not happening until later on in the month. We got another week to prepare. But I just want people to be aware that this is coming up, especially a lot of people head to West Seattle who don't normally live there. They might be riding their bike or whatever. If the weather's getting nice, I want everybody to know with enough advance warning that this is going to be happening.
We appreciate it.
Do you think in the coming months and years, we're going to see more emphasis on specifically bridges around the city because of this disaster that happened in Baltimore?
Well, that and also just the fact that they're so old. I mean, look at the transportation levy that Mayor Bruce Harrell in Seattle just came up with last week, the biggest in city history. Well, because I just look up the street from us here. You've got the University Bridge. You've got the Montlake Bridge. You've got the Ballard and, Fremont. All those bridges are like 100 years old. They need work. They need some TLC just to keep up. So, yeah, I mean, that has to happen. It's one of the, and again, that's another reason why we're seeing so much work being done on some of the ferry terminals, is also to retrofit them for earthquakes, because in an earthquake, some of these bridges might not survive. And the ferry system would probably be the only way to get goods and services around a little bit if we get something super big. So, yeah, there's a lot to go on. Our infrastructure is not well maintained.
Well, I'm glad we're making the investment for sure.
Time for your daily dose of kindness. It's brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. The solar eclipse brought together a class reunion 50 years in the making. In today's Daily Dose of Kindness from Rochester, New York, here's WHAM's Natalie Calzontony. She has the story.
It's not about the eclipse. It's about you guys being here to share this time with my family, me, and each other.
Patrick Moriarty was 22 years old in 1978 when he promised his earth science students that they would reunite for the 2024 total solar eclipse.
So I said to the kids, hey, why don't you just go ahead and circle that eclipse and we'll get together. And after I did that for the next 16 years with all of my classes that I taught earth science to.
Moriarty says he created a Facebook page to spread the word, but a lot of students remembered what he said in class. More than 100 people showed up to the Moriarty Eclipse Gathering on April 8th.
It's not about the eclipse anymore to me. It's all about the reunions.
Kevin Thompson and Chuck O'Brien were in Moriarty's class together back in 1982. They say they are grateful Moriarty kept his promise to reunite.
Definitely the longest homework assignment in the history of any teacher.
He wasn't just a great teacher, he was an inspirational teacher.
1982, there we go.
Another 1982 student, Nick Stathis, drove 5 hours from Westchester for the gathering. He says Moriarty inspired him to become an earth science teacher.
It's a tribute to both the eclipse, but also the power of teaching. Both Mr. and Mrs. Moriarty affected a lot of people.
While clouds covered the view of the eclipse in Rochester, this group took joy in being together again for the once-in-a-lifetime event.
Everybody got so quiet and just let the environment around them take over. And it just seemed very magical.
Moriarty joked that he would hold another viewing party for the next total eclipse, scheduled for 2044 in Wisconsin. When I asked him if there's any truth in the joke, he said, who knows? I wasn't sure about this one.
That was sweet. And that was Angela going, aw, because it is a sweet story.
I love that. It just, and it for me, it just reminds me that teachers have so much power and the difference they can make and how the kids were inspired, I guess, the adults now.
I forget what I think it was seventh grade or maybe sixth grade, and I don't remember the class, but I do remember the teacher having us put together a time capsule, but then nobody called me. So I don't know if that time capsule still exists. I would love to see it if it did.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. Now joining us from the G and Ursula Show, which you can hear from 9 to noon right here on Cairo Radio, G. Scott.
What's up,
G., good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's happening?
Look, you watch both NCAA games, I have to imagine.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was just telling the crew, I said, for me, I watch both, and I felt like the women's game was more exciting. Is it just me, or did you feel that way, too?
Have y'all ever gone on a date, or before you've gone on a date, knew you didn't want to go on a date? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about, you know,
yeah.
You're getting ready to go out. You've already made plans. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're supposed to go out on Friday. And then, hey, are we still on for the day? Like, oh. So you end up doing, so you don't want to go. And then when you go, the date goes exactly like you thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
Awful.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, he's like, can I get a goodbye kiss? No, you can't get no kiss. You know what I mean?
So that's how you felt about the men's game?
That's how I felt about the men's game last night.
I had a feeling. You were so excited for the women's tournament.
Look, y'all, the women's tournament. Let's save that one. Let's just talk about the men's. I didn't want to watch it, but I had to watch it because I didn't want anybody saying, well, how come you didn't watch the men's game? You can't say that the men's game was better if you didn't watch it. I wanted to make sure that. And I knew I was going to come on this show, right? And I want to do my job and do my homework. But I felt like I was in study hall. I did not want to study for this test. That men's game, it was 75-60 was the final score. UConn back-to-back champions. Now, you would think that the storylines in itself, it would be enough to make everybody intrigued. Colleen, this is the sixth national championship for UConn.
Two in a row, back to back.
Yeah. Only three teams recently have done that. You had the Florida Gators back in 06 and 07. You had the Duke Blue Devils, 91, 92. You think all of that? I don't care.
So
the women's game.
So what's missing? Is it style of play? Is it the stories just aren't good enough? What is it? What is the magic that's missing?
Heroes.
Mm.
Names.
Yep.
You need the name. You know what I'm saying?
And we didn't really
have any standout
for the men's.
Like, you get ready to go out on this date, and you're like, who are you? I don't know, but I know this person. I've been knowing that person since high school, and that's what the women's game was about. Like, you get ready to go on that date with that women's game, and it was just fantastic, everything about it. And I think the women's game was the storyline. It was the Caitlin Clarks. It was the Angel Reese. It was the Paige Beckers. It was the Juju Watkins.
And it wasn't so much of the play, because we have heard that before when, you know, it wasn't that long ago when we were still talking about our women's games even interesting to watch, which I hope we can stop saying that now. But it was, people were arguing, no, women's games are more exciting to watch because there's more team play. It's not so much that one star player like a Stephen Curry or something always shooting threes.
No,
it's teamwork.
No, you're so right.
Scrappier.
The offensive continuity is there. Even though UConn, I will say, they do some pretty good job on offense. They do a good job. But the women's game is definitely a lot of more continuity on offense, a lot of passing of the ball, made free throws, all that stuff. But I think at the end of the day, what really made us all intrigued, the reason why the Final Four matchup game got 14 million viewers, right, with the women's game, because the game needs names. I didn't mean to rhyme, but I did. Games need names. And so the names were just fantastic. But again, did I watch? Yes. Either way, I think that the women's game, it was a watershed moment. And oh, by the way, on April 15th, we have the WNBA draft.
Woo-hoo.
Right?
I cannot wait for this.
How many people are waiting for Caitlin Clark? The Indiana Fever, who has a number one pick, they're like, come on, baby.
So she's number one. I know Dawn Staley was saying she's going to be number one.
Yeah, number one.
We have reached our final stage of today's show, which means it is Mickey time. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning.
Hey, you know, you've been doing some research on something I've hadn't even really thought about, but it's our pets and allergies.
Yeah.
And yeah, it wasn't something that was top of mind, but I've been struck by it. So what did you find out?
So I noticed that my dog was sneezing a lot and scratching a lot. And I thought, oh, my poor puppy.
sympathy, right? Because yeah. I'm sneezing a lot and my ears are itchy a lot. So I reached out to Seattle veterinarian, Dr. Mona Radashwar, about, you know, dogs and them experiencing allergy symptoms. And she says that they do experience allergies, but not like us. And so I have audio, but it didn't play. But what she says is that you know, when you see your dog sneezing a lot, that is not a sign of seasonal allergies. It is actually a sign of something else. And so at any rate, I did. No, I think
my computer's actually turned off.
So it's all good.
For some reason.
That's always okay. Fun.
Yeah, that's okay.
Colleen's like, I'm going to fix this.
But the bottom line is
that the sneezing, for us, it may look like an allergy, but for a dog's, it is not.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, this is tough because the sneezing isn't the main one we see for allergies. It's itchy skin more so.
Yeah. So if your dog is scratching a lot, if your dog is shaking its head, if you, you know, pull back some of the fur and you see those, you know, like a lot of little bumps or something like that, they could be experiencing allergies. Another thing is that dogs don't go through seasonal allergies like we do.
Oh.
They just go through allergies. Mm-hmm. Like it's all year round.
Really?
And so, but what's really interesting is that Dr. Radashwar says that that you can typically treat the symptoms the same way we do. Give them a little Zyrtec, a little Benadryl.
Yeah, you can actually do that for dogs.
Well, it's advised that you do call the veterinarian before mm-hmm. you decide to dose your pup up. But they do write those prescriptions or just say go over the counter, dose them with, you know, however many milligrams. No harm, no foul. You're good to go.
But the symptoms aren't similar to humans. That was what the interesting part is. We think, oh, my cat or my dog is sneezing, but that doesn't necessarily mean allergies. It's more itching.
Right.
And what, do they get watery eyes?
They can get watery eyes. They can get yucky eyes. I call them the yucks.
The gunks.
Because I'm like, oh, come here. You're so cute. And then my kids are like, that's gross. You're cleaning their eyes.
No,
I'm like, they've
got it's your
gunks.
Baby.
I'm like, I did it to you. Yeah. I wiped your butt. Come on.
And it's year round.
Yeah, it is year round. They also said the anal glands can also experience allergies there as well. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to know about that. But yeah, so the most common allergies that they see in pets, more so dogs, food allergies, which is something that really I wanted to know more about because my dog, Snow, who is actually the front cover of the story on MyNorthwest.com when he was a puppy, he had food allergies. He was failure to thrive in the beginning of his life. And so we did a bunch of blood work. And what we found is that he is allergic to wheat and gluten.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Wow. Your dog has celiac disease?
Yes.
So on trend.
Okay, so how do you know? Because I'm probably just like humans, it can be difficult to tell if you have a food sensitivity or allergy. Yeah. Are there any signs in dogs that might be different than what we might expect?
So for us, Snow was throwing up after he ate. So he couldn't keep his food down. Another symptom was that he wasn't gaining weight. He's a white lab. He should be 100 pounds. He's actually like 55 pounds, skinny and tall. But the vets tell us that he's very healthy and very strong. He's 8 years old now. So you gotta look at, and the skin. His skin was constantly flaky and red. So we knew something was wrong. And so we took him in. I was happy just to find out that it was allergies and not something more. So we feed him a raw diet. He's been on a raw diet ever since.
I've heard that those fresh food diets, and you can get them at stores now. You used to have to make them yourself, but now they sell them. And you'll notice there's like skin issues clear up. And they found things like plastics in some of that dry food that you feed animals too, which is causing reactions.
I watched a documentary and I was like, never again. But
it's expensive, though.
Yes, it is. I think one of them, something, I can't even think of the name of it right now, but we looked into it and we got the samples and it was $380 a month. And I went, I'm going to go back to just buying some, you know, ground chuck and rice and fish oil and pumpkin and just make your food. He's the most spoiled dog in the entire world.
But we bred them this way, didn't we?
This is very true. That's right. But listen, get your dog checked out if you think, if your dog is sneezing, it could be something wrong with the mouth.
That information to me is particularly really interesting because as a first-time dog owner, my wife and I have had our dog Penny for coming up on 4 years now. And when we were first becoming dog parents, we, you know, scoured online for advice about, oh, what if my dog's doing this? What does this mean? If my dog's doing this, what does this mean? It's nice to have actual answers of, oh, okay, if she is sneezing a lot, then we should get her, you know, her dental health checked out, instead of thinking, oh, the sneezing means she's stressed out or something
she's
like
got
that.
Seasonal allergies. Right. Yeah, no, true. A lot of sneezing in dogs means there might be something going on internally, more specifically, according to Dr. Radashwar, that maybe they have an infected tooth.
And just one more quick question, because I just took one of those, you know how we can take those genetic testing now to find out where you're from. Well, now they have like food allergy tests where you just give like a blood sample and send it in for humans. Do they have that for animals
yet? They do have it in for animals, but Dr. Radashwar in our interview said that she doesn't trust them because they did a blind study where they put in like some fake saliva and like some and it all came back saying that fake saliva had all the symptoms of something.
No.
Stop it. So don't. So yeah, make sure you're going someplace reputable. Go to your veterinarian. Go to the veterinarian dermatologist.
Ones are like $300.
I know.
Oh no.
I couldn't believe it. I was about to drop some cash on one too, and she's like, no, don't.
We need
to
do a Cairo News investigation. Yes.
I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.